Good afternoon, everyone. We'll get started. I think our colleagues will join us in a moment. Would you call the roll, please, for the afternoon session?
Seltzman? Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Hales?
Here. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the time certain items that we have queued up this afternoon. We'll start, of course, with 1031.
Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission presentation to City Council.
Well, I'm pleased to call forward Director James and soon some folks in the community that have been working really hard on this issue. I guess here's how I would introduce it. This is important work, fervently believed in by all of us in this community, incompletely accomplished, with learning as we go along. And that, to me, is why we're here and why it's important that we hear from the Equitable Contracting Commission today, and as well as staff from the Office of Equity and Human Rights and our director, about how we are making this a city of opportunity for everyone. That's the goal. We're not there yet. How do we get there? How do we get there sooner and better than we have so far? That's why we're here. So, Director James, thank you very much for your work in supporting this effort, and we look forward to hearing from you today.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate it. It's my pleasure this afternoon to be here and introduce the report from the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission. As you know, in February 2015, the City Council established the Commission on Equitable Contracting and Purchasing, designed to increase the utilization of minorities and women-owned businesses in the city, in city contracting, and increase the inclusion of minorities and women in the workforce as well on city projects. It was originally housed in, and staffed in the Bureau of Internal Business Services, and then the commission was transferred to the Office of Equity and Human Rights and held its first meeting under that umbrella in June of this year. I would be remiss, however, if I didn't point out that there was no staff position associated with that transfer, so I really do want to thank my staff for stepping up to ensure that the support was provided as effectively as possible. And the report that you see, as always, Jeff Selby and his expertise in preparing such documents. No, nobody else gets to steal him from me, but he has been the one who put this document together in the lovely fashion that it is.
If I might just interrupt for a second, I didn't understand when we looked at the budget that the staff was no staff or money for staff was being transferred over to you.
Correct. There was a small budgetary piece that came with it. To fund the commission itself, in some sense, to have a budget for the commission, but there was no staff that associated with it.
Maybe this is something the commission will address. I thought we established the staffing when we established the committee. So do go on. I think that's
some funding, but no additional staff as yet.
Correct. So in the time that it's been within the Office of Equity and Human Rights, commissioners have received data on minorities and women in contracting and workforce. Thanks to the mayor's office help, Diana Nunez specifically, and Ben Mauro for helping to disaggregate much of the data that you will see this afternoon. The data came over in an aggregate form. It was not disaggregated specifically by race and gender, nor by contract within the by individual projects. And so Ben, from the mayor's office, literally went through project by project and disaggregated that by comparing the data of certified firms to the data of who was working on particular projects. So was able to disaggregate that specifically. But as I'm sure you know, that procurements, the platform that they use is not able to do it in that same way. So it has to be done. It had to be done manually. So the commission, after receipt of the data, really wanted to live up to its mission of providing guidance and advice to the City Council. And they're here before you today to offer their advice and counsel based on the data that they've received and have conclusions and recommendations based upon that information. There are currently six commissioners. There are then three open seats on the commission. We'll be moving to fill those within the next 30 to 60 days, and we'll be coming back before you with names of individuals that we would ask you to seat on the commission itself. If you've had a chance to look through the data, I mean, it will be certainly presented to you and explained to you, but I think the data will speak for itself that we do have a long way to go. There have been quite a few ordinances and resolutions put in place to address the issue of minority women-owned business contracting and workforce. We still have a long way to go. And I think the presentation today will give you some recommendations on how to continue to address and improve that, as well as their thoughts and conclusions on why we are here, where we are, I guess. So I would at this time introduce Commissioner Maurice Romming, who will begin the presentation, and then he will then just introduce his fellow commissioners as the presentation continues, and we can certainly come back for any questions that you may have for me.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So good afternoon and welcome.
Well, thank you, Commissioners and Mayor, for having us here. One of the things that I want to introduce you to is Nikki. Nikki's going to actually run through this project as far as the data points. She's an assistant project manager. She works underneath Allie as a assistant project manager. And so this data, it's her future. This is what's going to affect her as she goes through her professional career in this industry. So I want to just kick it off to her and let her lead in this proposal.
Great.
Some of the council might not know who Allie is.
Oh, Allie O'Neill, which is she heads up our construction division and also is my wife. So that's who she works for. So
thank you.
Thank you for having me here today. Okay. So Resolution 36718 was created the Fair Contracting Forum Reporting. It's one of the earliest resolutions and was established to support, promote accountable, fair, and effective contracting practices. It provides its purpose is to provide oversight and invite greater community input regarding the city's procurement practices. Based on the data we have here today, it's clear that inequality hasn't changed in the construction industry, and perhaps has gotten worse. The FCF has not had a positive effect. Maurice, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, one of the things I would say is that we created these resolutions, we passed the resolutions, but the impact, we're actually going in the wrong direction. The impact hasn't been noted, and so it's glad to see the ECPC as a part to be able to identify this for you.
Resolution 3675 established the Minority Evaluation Board. It was established to make sure minorities and women had a say in the evaluation process. At least one member must be a minority selected on a panel of 5 or fewer, and 3 minorities on a panel of 9 to 11. Now, I just want to imagine if the whole board included only minorities and women. Perhaps these workforce and contract numbers would look a lot different. We often have all white male committees stating that they represent all of Portland, and no one bats an eye. Why don't we change that up? Do you have anything else to add? Okay. Okay, so one of the most in-depth resolutions is 36944, which includes many aspects, including contract workforce. It established a 27 aspirational goal for minorities and women on city-funded construction projects for apprentices and journey-level workers combined. Already, that's an issue since it doesn't split the goals between journey-level and apprentices as well as minorities and women. Okay, as you can see by this pie chart, white men strongly outnumber all other races, and we're going to take a closer look at year 2013-14. There is a little mistake there, but it's year 2013 and 14. Okay, there are 2.5 more white men than all other categories put together. The only category that comes close are Latino men, and they are still outnumbered 5 to 1. And let's look at the gender gap. Altogether, there were 9,306 men compared to 166 women. That's more than 56 times more men than women. Okay, looking at some of these bar graphs here, Asian, Latino, Latina, Native American, white women all dropped from the first and second year in 2014 to 2015. Most notably, though, are African American men and women. They actually drop consistently each year. I would also like to point out that for African American women, most of them are laborers instead of carpenters or mechanical or some of those other better paid jobs in the industry. And most of them are also apprentices. Many of the hours come to less than a day of actual work. So yes, the numbers are there, but the hours are laughable. The same goes for African-American men, although it gets a little better. For example, in carpentry, there were two African-American men on the journey level, and they worked a total of 21.5 hours, which comes to less than 3 days. The rest were apprentices, and they worked more or less than a couple of weeks. So even though minorities are there willing to work, minorities and minority women especially are not being utilized throughout the project. These numbers are horrifically low, and most of the diversity is contributed to CBA projects, which we'll look at in a minute. Without those projects, these numbers would be much, much worse. Furthermore, everyone is spread out on multiple projects. Imagine being the only Black woman on the job. You have no support, no one to back you up if you have a complaint. If the city and the various committees that are in place supposedly to support you aren't doing their job, it's hard to continue in a field, even if it's good pay. Do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, one of the things I'd like to point out is that on most of the construction projects, minorities are relegated to a shovel, a broom, or a flag. Now, this is unfortunate, but the reality, when we started to look at the data and we looked at the utilization, when you did have utilization, that's where minorities and women had the opportunities of work. It wasn't in the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing trades, the carpentry trades, or the concrete work. It was those types of jobs, and that's reflected in the data provided by the city.
Okay, another aspect of Resolution 36944 is prime contractor development. The city resolved to accept recommendations for a strategy to increase minority-owned, women-owned, and emerging small business utilization in city contracting. Notice that they say accept recommendations, not make recommendations. They also resolved to do a business development course for program participants, which anecdotally usually is a workshop on how to use QuickBooks. There has to be a better, more effective way to use this resolution. Okay, let's look at the charts. Let's look at OBE, MBEs, and WBEs. In 2011-2012, OBE had 190 contracts, WBE had 20 contracts, and MBE had 16 contracts. The numbers go up marginally in 2012-2013, but get very interesting in 2014-2015. As you can see, MBE had 57 contracts, OBE had 942 contracts, and WBE had 88 contracts. While these M and WBE contracts appear to increase exponentially due to the city's resolutions or whatnot, if you look at OBE's contracts, they increased from 190 to 942. If you compare OBE to WBE, OBE had 9 times more contracts in 2011-2012 and 10 times more contracts in 2014-2015. Compared to MBE, OBE had 12 times more contracts in 2011-2012, then 16 times more contracts in 2014-2015. Year 2014-2015 could have just had more contracts altogether, and MBE and WBE actually fell behind in comparison. Everyone's numbers may have increased, but so did the gap. Maurice, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I think that I'm hoping that this resonates, that the fact is that there's more work happening out there. Majority firms and emerging small business firms, they're getting quite a bit more work, and the opposite is happening for women and minorities, both in the workplace, whether it's contracting, whether it's workforce numbers. We continue to see this lack of utilization of minorities after the disparity study. We still see that drop, and so we're getting to that point where it's getting really close to when we talk about 22 hours utilized by African-American carpenter, journeyman carpenters, when we talk about 20 hours utilized by or 0 hours utilized for journeymen women, they're out there. Your study and the data shows that they actually went to work, whether or not they were laid off, left, but we see this consistent pattern of a journeyman female getting on a job site, having 4 hours worth of work, and then it's no longer on the job site. African Americans having 3 days worth of work, and then letting let go or something. So I think the ECPC wants to look deeper into this because it's so dramatic decrease that it's impacting.
Who decides which of the people who show up for the job get 4 hours of work versus a full day of work.
And so because we're not, in my opinion, holding the contractors and subcontractors accountable, what happens is you have, in my opinion, microaggressions that might occur on the job site, which then if you're a minority or a woman, you're like, okay, I am not welcome here. So either they leave and quit and go to work somewhere else where they're more accepted, or you have foremen and superintendents that make the determination that that person isn't worthy to be on that job site, and so then they're let go. But that we're seeing that pattern, so we're not seeing that there's not an availability. There is an availability of minorities and women ready to work. What's happening is they're not having the opportunity to work on city projects.
And so what you're saying is that the company that's doing the work is first responsible for who's getting, but also the city is responsible because we're not holding the prime the overseer accountable.
Yeah, we're not holding them responsible from the resolution that we passed, 36944. This is 27% utilization for apprenticeship and journeyman. I think that's where the ECPC would like to try to help to make sure that all contractors, both prime and sub, are held responsible for some sort of either retention or training to actually be able to have a more acceptable utilization of women and minorities.
Okay. Then next aspect of Resolution 36944 is subcontractor utilization. It created an inclusion plan for subcontractors to participate on city-funded projects. Administrative Rule 1.23 added more practices and procedures for implementing the subcontractor equity program. Basically, it doesn't really give specific ways to get more minority and women subcontractors. It says things like set goals for DMW ESB subcontractor utilization, but doesn't actually give a goal. And encourage contractors to diversify their subcontractor utilization, but has no way to enforce that. It relies on the belief that all contractors are actually interested in increasing diversity, when the more likely scenario is that they're interested in increasing their bottom line. Because let's be real, they're businessmen. The number of contracts increased from year to year, but so did the gap, just like with prime contractors. This should be 2014-2015. OBE's overall dollar amount was about 7 times higher than MBE and 11.5 times higher than WBE, whereas in 2012-2013, it was only 3 to 4 times higher, respectively. Maurice, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, and again, you know, at one point we have to ask ourselves what's going on. We have the prime contracting program that you look at the numbers from when it was conceived to where it's at, and you see a reduction in minority participation. When you look at the workforce numbers and you see a reduction from the disparity study and the resolution of utilization in high-skilled jobs. So we're seeing this pattern, and at some point we have to ask, is this institutional racism? Is this contractors discriminating against women and minorities? We have to ask that question. Then if we're honest with the question, then we actually have to look and say, what are the real solutions to these problems? And not just create another resolution or create another plan, but actually sit down and say, how do we fix this problem? Because we are going in the wrong direction, and we actually have to ask ourselves that question.
Okay. Another aspect of Resolution 39644 involves professional, technical, and expert services. It requires bureaus to solicit from at least 4 qualified consultants, and half must be from minority women ESB firms. The aspirational goal was increased from 15% to 20%, and most of the minority consultants are outreach coordinators who specialize in getting minority and women involvement, and so far, it seems ineffective. Do you have anything?
Okay.
Another aspect of Resolution 36944 is contractor pre-qualification. It was created to eliminate the pre-qualification for construction projects under $250,000, and unfortunately, the issue has still not been resolved. And that's the last resolution for that. For the community benefits agreement, this is resolution 36954, and it was designed to increase opportunities for minority women and disadvantaged-owned businesses. The Portland Water Bureau piloted this program on the Kelly Butte Reservoir and interstate maintenance facility renovation projects. It has been a powerful tool in promoting the inclusion of underrepresented people. Unfortunately, the only data we have comparing CBA projects versus non-CBA projects is for year 2012-2013. But as you can see, the numbers increase for CBA projects versus non-CBA, and it also has DBE, which already automatically adds a 23 projects to their numbers. And then also, most of the CBA contracts awarded to MBE subcontractors were to flagging, trucking, and landscaping companies. Very few contracts were awarded in fields that are generally better paid and have more of an imprint on the building. Also, each CBA project lists the amount of hours worked by women and minorities, not just how many of each group there were. It's the only report that gives a clear breakdown of the data, and it shows that they were utilized throughout the project and much longer than a couple of days. As mentioned earlier, these two projects greatly contributed to the workforce numbers, and without them, the numbers would look much, much worse. Maurice, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I'll just say, and I know that there's a CBA meeting coming up, I believe, next week, but if you remove that, you all of a sudden see almost a non-utilization of women and minorities. The gap is that great. The reason why you see such a drastic drop last year is because the CBA projects are winding down. And so the reason why we report out that so few hours, we're talking less than 100 hours for African Americans, we're talking, I think, 49 on the carpentry side. Why are those numbers so low? It's because there's no one monitoring, looking at it, and trying to make sure that there's true participation. For me, it's truly heartbreaking because I come from a family of affordable housing. I got my opportunity in a CTE program for electrical contracting or electrical. I was able to start my own business. We were from a poor family. This was our outlet to be able to have me get a pathway out of poverty. We're denying people that pathway when we're not monitoring this stuff. It's truly unfortunate. I hope that I could move this commission and this mayor to do something about this, It's been too long. We can't have another disparity study that's going to show zero results. You know, there are people out there looking to work on these jobs right now. There's tons of construction right now. I hope that this resonates with you, this opportunity that we have to move people out of poverty and not just to continue this pathway in this direction that we're going.
So looking at the data that you just showed us, would it be fair to draw the conclusion that when the city is in charge of managing the project, the numbers are better and that women and minorities are used for more days? Is that what I heard correctly?
What's happening is when the only real tracking that occurred that I could see is through the CBA projects that show that you had a labor management oversight committee that was able to do course corrections, and if a woman or minority was removed from the project, there was organizations that could track those people and make sure that they could actually continue into the program. And so there was a lot of tracking and a lot of guidance to basically help the city meet those goals through the community, through the pre-apprenticeship programs, through the community organizations. So it was a system that was put together to create these outcomes. When that went away, that's when those people...
Sorry, I didn't mention interrupt. So that would mean that you have both an employer who really wants to do the right thing and the community partnerships that can help find the people to replace somebody who left.
Yeah.
How much does the hiring hall process, where particularly in the construction trade unions where there's a seniority system, how does that play into which individuals get to work on a job?
And so one of the things is with the hiring halls, And I think they would say the same thing, where they could diversify, and they've through different mechanisms, they said, okay, we could diversify, and they have. The hiring halls actually have the most diverse workforce through Boley reports, which I'd be happy to share with you guys. The fact is that the contractor is ultimately responsible for hiring those people. So if you have a contractor, that the minute I walk in the room to go to work and they see the color of my skin and they let me go and I only have 2 hours, the hall can't call that contractor and say, hey, you need to put this person back to work. That's the discretion of the contractor. And so although you have union halls that, in my opinion, are doing their best job to make sure that they have piercing of the books so that minorities, if I request a minority and the owners request a minority, I can actually get that minority, might be lower down on the books, but actually can come to the front of the line to work for me. Because they're doing innovative stuff like that, they're actually proactive. But at the end of the day, if we do not hold our contractors accountable and our subcontractors accountable, the unions could do all the work in the world and they'll have 50% minorities, and those 50% will stay on the books and the majority of people will continue to work.
Thank you.
You have any other questions from us?
Other questions, reactions? Thank you.
I believe that recommendations are coming next.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, who's next? Please come on up. Michael. Andrew, come on up. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Andrew McGough with Work Systems, member of ECPC.
And Michael Birch with the Carpenters, Commissioner, ECPC.
So maybe I'll kick us off. We're here to just provide our perspective on some recommendations to hopefully address some of the challenges that we've seen either through the data or just sort of our, you know, historical underperformance around these issues. So I'm not really going to read through these, but one of the things that was pretty clear as a new commissioner, as a new committee, is a lot of the workforce data is, we think, collected pretty sporadically. There's not a consistent methodology to collect it. There's not a consistent array of elements that we're looking at. So one of our recommendations is to really create a standard template that helps us track a variety of workforce data, and then hold all contractors to reporting that data. We think that there are easy ways to do this. You know, we actually have a tracking system that we use for workforce-related stuff that ties into the unemployment insurance system. We'd be happy to sit down and figure it out if that were an issue for the city. But just kind of looking at what are those elements that are essential to not only understanding the race and gender of people, but what occupations are they in? How many hours are they working? Are they actually seeing an increase in their wages? Are they moving up the scale? So that's sort of, I think, our initial recommendation.
Right. In view of the data that we've received through the ECPC, it's pretty clear what has occurred since the disparity study. And we made some pretty practical recommendations that we think would be easy to implement if there was a desire on the part of the city and the bureaus to implement the changes that we recommended. And we think that they will produce results. We spent quite a bit of time and energy and resources in trying to come up with some valuable ways to affect the contracting and the workforce. That the city has their arms wrapped around, and we think these are good recommendations.
Carl, are you going to put them back up?
Yeah, keep going, please.
Yeah.
There was a flash, but we lost them.
Oh, you lost them.
So were you done, Andrew?
Yeah, no, I can. Our second recommendation, just sort of looking at, you know, trying to address that issue about, we do pretty well, it appears, on getting people into entry-level positions, apprenticeship-level positions. The real challenge is to help them transition to journey-level status. So creating some retention programs, some advancement programs in partnership with either labor unions or other organizations, contractors who are on site to help new entrants into these professions transition up, and looking at effective strategies to do that, we think would be a smart thing to pursue moving forward. And this is one that's sort of near and dear to my own heart. I've talked to you, I think, on multiple occasions. You know, we have a public workforce system in the city of Portland that sees probably about 40,000 people a year. Those are unemployed people and underemployed people, and unfortunately, it means that they tend to be more diverse than the general population. So it's a great place to go and recruit potential candidates for training or for jobs. And so assuring some connection to that system, I think, leverages the resources that are already in there and also presents an opportunity to combine resources to create a much better opportunity for people who are interested in pursuing these kinds of positions.
Andrew, can I just try to restate that a little bit based on our conversation? So what we want to get away from is the case where someone gets a job, does one project, and then they're back on the street.
Right.
We want to use a broader regional framework to be able to have people go from job to job to job where they're growing their skills and having a chance to have continuous employment. Is that the concept?
That's certainly embedded in these, yes, because it's not only about trying to be successful on a job. I mean, the challenge here is you have to be successful on multiple jobs and creating those that connectivity both on a regional level and then also, I think, on the training and support level is what, you know, people need in order to transition up.
And before you move on, question number three, what issues do we need to consider, because you said where appropriate to direct them to use our partner at WorkSource? Yeah. Are there some technicalities of when we can and cannot do that?
I think, you know, it depends. If the relationship, if there's a lot of people on the bench, that will probably need to be negotiated, you know, project by project. And I think it might vary by occupation as well. So you may have a surplus and in one occupation but a shortage in another, or you may have high levels of minority and women represented in one occupation, not another. So it's just trying to figure that out. That's, I think, what was meant by that.
But you're suggesting that we could, on some public projects, say you need to start with this partner of ours and then you can go to the others? You think that that would be a possibility?
I think that's absolutely possible.
Thank you.
The current workforce plan actually has, I believe, a writer in it that says if you cannot find who you're looking for at the hall, that you go to, you know, these programs in the community that are state-approved pre-apprenticeship programs. So it would be pretty simple, I think, to add workforce.
So could we switch that to say you start with WorkSource and then you can go to the hiring hall?
I believe you could.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I believe you could. And you asked Maurice about earlier about whether or not we could provide the union halls could provide workers to jobs. We can pierce the list. There's language in our agreements that will allow us to pierce the list when the requirements are on the job, requiring ethnic minorities, women, apprentices, journey-level workers. We can meet those requirements. The issue is having, like Maurice said, requirements of the contractors, not aspirational goals, but the cooperation of the contractor and real goals that we can assist them in meeting.
Thank you.
Finally, you know, I mean, I think really making sure that if we're going to invest in training, we're investing in organizations that are successful in providing that training for women and minorities. And then I think sort of this underlines, I think, all of the recommendations of the council is that we want to use ECPC as a mechanism to sort of oversee the resolutions and the progress on those resolutions, because we think that that's an appropriate role, and it's one that we think we could do effectively and be, you know, the kind of resource that I think was envisioned through the creation of that body.
Gentlemen, I have just two questions about your recommendations. So, I guess one of the things that we're going to have to evaluate is get some feedback from procurement and Christine and find out how this aligns with stuff we're doing, how it doesn't. And we also need some legal feedback to the extent we're going to be trying to, when you say pierce, when you say, for example, pierce the list at a union hiring hall, I mean, now we're getting into an area where there are some potentially some legal issues. So have your recommendations been reviewed and by procurement and by legal? But let's start with procurement. Have we got any feedback from our procurement team about both the recommendations in substance and in terms of timeline for implementation?
Not to my knowledge, no.
This is the
not to my knowledge. But a piece of your question has to do with, have we gotten feedback from procurement?
Yeah.
We pierced the list on the two pilot projects. Procurement was at the table.
Yeah, and I'm talking about overall recommendations.
Right. Okay. So, no, these are recommendations
our partner
that we've
obviously
created.
Doing this, so, and have these recommendations been forwarded to them for some comment?
I don't know. I have to ask
the chair.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
That can happen.
Yeah.
That sounds like the next step.
Yeah.
With Rex, at the last ECPC meeting, these recommendations were discussed, though Christine wasn't there and heard them, but there was no formal
Could I just have, I concur with your recommendations, and particularly the one of having the commission oversee these issues, and I'd like to add one that I would like you to oversee, because you said oversee the recommendations on resolutions and ordinances. Mr. Birch will remember that when we were doing paid sick time, there was a discussion in Portland as to whether the building trades and the hiring halls would be included or not, and they were under the Portland system, and then the state exempted them. So I would like to know, what are the numbers for how much sick time both male and female members of the building trades from the hiring hall are claiming? And I'd also like to know, given the issue of paid parental leave, which can perhaps come under sick time for a little bit, how many men and women take time away from the hiring hall after the addition of a child to their family, and is there a disparity between male and female? Thank you.
Find that out. Okay. So if you give me another minute,
please.
I'd like to read a statement. This is my statement, by the way. Please. It's not the ECPC. I'd like to first thank the mayor and the city council for the opportunity to present today on these critically important issues. I also commend Mayor Hills and the council for creating the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission. When African-American journeymen show up on the job site, are turned away by their contractor, given show-up pay for 2 hours. Then they show up as, then that show-up pay is used to calculate percentages of minority workforce participation on city contracting projects. The system is clearly broken. When, as in 2014-15, annual participation of African-American workers in city construction projects is less than 5% of the hours worked by white males, for example, 286 hours for African-American males compared to 6,020 for white males, clearly the system is broken. When workforce utilization for all categories of minority and women workers shows a steady decline, when minority contractors get the smallest sliver of the contracting pie, clearly the system is broken. Mayor Hale, City Council, these are not distant memories from the 50s or 60s. These are realities from the last 5 years. Obviously, the work of the ECPC is needed more now than ever. I am, however, gravely concerned that the commitment of some of the work of the ECP is doubtful at best. Since our founding, the ECPC has struggled to be taken seriously, not only by the bureaus that are charged with overseeing, but by members of the council itself. We have been stonewalled by bureaus when it came to the provision of the information that unveiled the facts I just mentioned. We have been circumvented when particular projects were deemed by certain decision makers to be inappropriate for our review. We have been provided insufficient resources to conduct the work that is necessary for us to meet our charge. And when we have been consulted at the 11th hour, after all decisions regarding certain procedures and projects have essentially been made by the very bureaus that resist our work. There have even been threats and efforts by some decision makers to disband the commission. These challenges have led some commissioners to resign in frustration. We're down 3. However, I cannot turn my back on this work. I've spent most of my working adult life attempting to eradicate opportunity disparities for minority workers, and the need is simply too great, the stakes too high for me to quit, regardless of the roadblocks and frustrations. Let me be clear. My goal as a commissioner on the ECPC is to transform the way Portland does business. I believe, Mayor Hills, that this is also the reason you created the ECPC. And plainly, we have seen there will be resistance to that sort of change. Overcoming that resistance will require political courage and leadership. Mayor, you told us that you want to make the ECPC truly work and not just a matter of appearances. I'm calling on both you and other commissioners to renew your commitment to the ECPC and our mission by doing the following: giving us genuine oversight authority and provide us with sufficient, dedicated staff and resources necessary to make that oversight a reality. 2, include us in the policy discussions from the beginning rather than leaving us out of the room or handing us systems that have already been developed without our input. And 3, accept and implement our recommendations even where, perhaps especially where, it's inconvenient or requires upsetting the status quo. There are examples in the city of what can happen when the stakeholders and policymakers work together, are committed to doing the right thing, and are given the right tools to get the work done. We can overcome the living history of racism. It will require hard work and dedication and acknowledging some difficult truths, but it is only by doing so that we will ever be able to become the city that we hope to be and the city that we hold ourselves out as. Otherwise, business will continue as usual, and the promise of economic opportunity for the city's minority communities will remain an illusion. Show-up pay for turned-away workers will be counted as utilization. Minority workforce hours will continue their steady decline, and the overwhelming amount of contracting opportunities will go to male white firms. Thank you for listening and having us here today.
Thank you. Thank you for your recommendations.
Just a question I have. Yes. In addition to that, part of it is the data keeping, the accuracy and such. And,
right.
Do the employees or the apprentices and journeymen who show up on the job get sent home after 2 hours? Do they report back to the hiring hall or to somebody that happened?
It depends. It depends on how long that apprentice has been around. If they have a mentor, they report it. Uh-huh. If they don't, they just put their name back on the list and they'll go out again.
And how did you get to the numbers of hours worked? Where did that data come from?
The data came from the city's report through the ECPC.
So the city requires that, and that's how we get that data?
The city, the data is reported to the city by the general contractor.
Right.
It comes in disaggregated, and then it's aggregated. So
right.
The only way to get it back is to have ECPC's office to disaggregate the data. That's how we find out.
And with your commissioners, you're all active in business. And I'm concerned that we may have a different kind of version of Portland Polite here, that you probably know if there's companies that are more likely to have those kind of practices than others. And I hope that the commission will be helping the council know what the problems are and how we can add more things into the list of things that we require so that we give bonus points to companies that are better about using minorities and perhaps demerits or something else for those who are not. And so I know that's a very complex thing that I'm asking you, but I do hope that that's part of how we can work together better as we continue to struggle with these issues.
From my point of view, we'd love to.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, who's next, please? Panel.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon and welcome.
My name is Herb Fricke. I'm here to present recommendations for PTE, Professional Technical Expert Services. I don't know if we have the slide up. Before I dive into the recommendations, just want to say one thing. When you look at the data from 2012 up to 20, 14 or whatever it is. I mean, the amount of work that the city has put out is like quadrupled or five times increased. So I think we're seeing a situation where we're starting to max out on what PTE firms are available to do that work. And when the comment about the outreach efforts, I think they're doing a remarkable job. It's just that there's not enough firms out there, and we need to be doing more than we can to find those firms that can do the work.
Can I ask you a question? You wear a lot of hats. In what capacity are you testifying today?
I'm on the commission.
As a commissioner?
As a commissioner, yeah.
So these are your views, not anyone you represent?
No, but I can tell you from my own experience, it's hard to find people out there to do the work. So just finding the professional staff. Everybody's really busy. But in terms of the recommendations, we'd like to see a hard goal set in terms of subcontracting set at the same as construction at 15%. And even that said, I think the goal should be pushed more toward minority contractors and women-owned businesses. Because the ESB, as you look at the data, the ESB numbers are actually, there are more contracts going to ESBs than there are individually, the minority businesses and the women-owned businesses. Revisor provide a better definition of qualifications for small business in PTE contracting. I think that relates more to how the individual under 50,000 contracts are done. We don't know how the individual PMs or the bureaus decide who they're going to send out the RFPs to in terms of which minority businesses or which MBEs, women-owned businesses, are qualified to get those RFPs. A disaggregate point system provided for minority participation. What we'd like to see there is a separate point system where the minority and women businesses, their points are separated out from the ESBs. Right now, everything's combined. That way we can see how the businesses themselves can prove themselves out and be shown that, yeah, we're focusing on minority and women businesses here. Require prompt pay for MWBE professional services firms. And that goes to say, I know there's been issues with the new system the city's implemented, but even with that, we're seeing prime contractors not paying subcontractors within as long as 60 days. So, and sometimes it's gone up to 90 days. A developed contracting utilization and tracking system for small business participation and awards as prime and subcontractors. We just like to see better data. It's not consistent, and in some cases it doesn't appear to be complete because I'm sure each bureau is keeping track of their own PT contracting, and it needs to be brought together, and somehow we can see that where all the contracts are actually going. And not in terms of just subcontracts, but prime contracting as well. Provide ECPC a city project list of future contracting opportunities. That's just, we'd like to see what's coming down the pike earlier. So that way in this business with PTE, you really need to know what's coming down the road early on so that you can start doing your networking. So that's all I have. Is there anything, Maurice?
No, so we sit on the same committee. That's why I'm up here twice. But I think if we're able to track this stuff and if the ECPC is given the data, we can actually do monthly data. We can do course corrections and actually help advise procurement on some of the things that they can do. One of the things that I tell you, Mr. Mayor, is that, you know, we want to be the aspirin. We don't want to be the headache. You know, we want to help. We're not here to beat anyone up. We want to try to work to get this problem fixed.
Questions?
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Just a couple of closing comments, if I might. I think you clearly heard the conversations around data.
What you have in front of you is data that was, in some sense, difficult to gather because of the time, effort, and energy it takes to have it done by hand. The software program that the city has in procurement isn't able to do it. I think, as Commissioner Burt said, the data comes in disaggregated. Then it goes into the city's software program and becomes aggregated all over again because of the way the software works. It doesn't have a place for all of the different demographics that come into it. And so I know that procurement is working hard to change that system, or at least end up with a system that would be able to be compatible with the state in a similar way that holds that disaggregated data, but now it doesn't have it. And so that makes it much more difficult. And then when you also consider that the data comes from different places, you have data that comes from PDC, you have data that comes from housing, and you have data that comes from the bureaus that go into procurement, all that is data that we have to go and get. It doesn't come into one place. We have to go get it. I've had to ask housing and PDC and others for their data. And then it comes in, and we have to then, again, ask them to do more with the data. Do you have the staff capacity to disaggregate the data? If not, then we have to then try to find the goodness of the mayor's staff who has time if they do. So it just becomes difficult. And if we're going to do this well, we need to know what the data looks like. And we don't have the best way to do that. We don't even have really the good way to do that. We just have the way that we make happen to do that. To Commissioner Fritz's point about can we begin to address or provide criteria by which we evaluate contractors who aren't doing what we would hope they would do. In the pre-qualification process, there is a criteria among many that allows us to take a look at how the contractors may be working with minority women-owned businesses. It is one of many criteria, but we don't have this data to evaluate. We don't know what their workforce looks like specifically when the pre-qual application comes to us. And then it becomes anecdotal conversation by the project managers who work in the various infrastructure bureaus, but they don't know this level of detail about the workforce, about whether somebody's come for 2 hours and been sent home. They don't have that data. And so, again, there's no efficient way to gather that, to use it sometimes when we need to do that. So just to underscore the importance of the data. You know, again, one of my favorite quotes is that organizations move in the direction of the questions they ask. We can ask the questions all day, but if we can't get the answers because the data is not available or we have to work too hard to get it, we're not going to get where we need to get. So with that, I will pause and ask if you have any questions of me, and if not, then certainly ask you to accept the report of the ECPC.
Dante, I may have some questions, but first, how many people signed up?
Three.
I wonder if we could hear the
comments.
All right,
let's do that and then call you back up, Dante. Thank you.
Use that to inform our questions.
All right, let's do that, please.
Please come on up. Nate McCoy, James Posey, and Matt Malmsteiner.
Good afternoon. Welcome, Nate.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Nate. I think you were first.
Right. Well, thank you, Mayor, Commissioners, for having me. My name is Nate McCoy. I'm the Executive Director of the National Association of Minority Contractors, Oregon's chapter. We're a membership and advocacy group. We have 32 and growing MBE specific contractors that we support through our services. I'm really here today as a last minute commitment to kind of just address some of the things that we've heard today. I'm not here to talk about data and really tell you what's the wrong or right process to take forward, but what I am here to do is to provide that voice from the minority contractors that I support. And really what I would like to say is that we've heard a lot of discussion today. I think where I want to take the conversation is to the next level where the real problems really lie and why some I think the workforce is really a shortage in the community. We have by, I don't think it's even by law, but a state statute that a low bid process is supposedly the best process for city government to be using on projects. As of recent, we've been doing a lot of other alternative contracting methods that I think have exemplified where we need to be looking and going in the future. CMGC, Construction Management General Contractor, alternative contracting. We have parks projects, two of them right now being built by minority prime contractors, not subcontractors, but minority prime contractors. No CBA agreements on this, these parks projects. Obligations to fulfill, you know, commitments to workforce, commitments to subcontractors. If I, you know, wearing my prior hat as a construction manager of the Housing Bureau, again, we didn't really have CBA sponsored projects. You could probably ask the Housing Bureau, numbers off the charts. I would agree in a lot of ways with some of the things that some of the CBA conversation is mentioning. But until we get to a point where we're actually talking about contractor development and workforce development, right now they're in silo. And I think until we get to a place where we can actually have the conversations mutually, you will continue to hear a one-sided conversation on both sides. And I think the biggest tragedy in this is, what are we talking about with our youth? As you look across the industry, and I work with Portland Public Schools very closely, we have 50% of minorities in the school system, but yet when we look at data, we can't even show 1% of minorities working on projects at the prime level. How are we going to get students to really look at career opportunities in the trades if they can't even identify with anybody in the workforce that looks like them? The numbers are staggering. I mean, it seems like a lot of these policies have influenced more a majority white organizations to grow and thrive, but yet our kids and the future kids continue to be left behind. So the great thing that I stand before here to say about my partners and my organization is that we don't have any CBA agreements. Out of the good heart of our contractors, we work with Roosevelt High School. We work with Benson High School. We work with a lot of the school systems already where we don't get paid to do anything but support these youth. So I think at some point I would like to make sure that we come together with leadership from council and have a real conversation about what's going on and hear these stories, because we're losing kids at a high rate. And, you know, if I throw housing in there, that's a whole nother gamut. But certainly just wanted to be here to offer my support, my opinions, and I will certainly be here next week as well.
Nate, so, can I just follow up a sec? We hope you're here next week, but we understand your wife's expecting, so we wish we wish you and her the best in the next couple of weeks. So you said something interesting about the silos and trying to bring this conversation together. Two things. One is, the next time we have this conversation, and we'll probably see you at the CBA discussion next Thursday. It's been moved to Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock. I wonder if you can also get as specific as possible about any recommendations that you have, but both in terms of the shared goals here, because we can be, people may be in silos, but I think there's a shared set of goals. The question is how you get there. And the second thing is, how do we reconcile some of these interests? CBA, no CBA, different approaches. But if the goal is to boost the numbers, let's say you started from the premise that you didn't care what the machinery was, what the mechanism was, but you did care about the outcome. Well, then we should all, then we're out of our silos, apparently, and we're all in accord. So when you're next before us, I'd love to hear some more specifics about where you think there are structural barriers, including state law and contracting rules, that, you know, if you could be king for a day, how would we change those, and what are the kinds of things? And the alternative contracting, you know, is something that we have tackled at this city, but as you know, it's very complicated legally because you have to show a lot of things, and so it's not something you can use all the time. That's number one. And number two, how do we move this conversation together? Because it does sometimes feel like we have two very strongly held views that come together, but I fear we're not reconciling them as well as we could. And you're an important part of this conversation, so I want us to go a little deeper on that.
Absolutely.
And you did get great outcomes at the Housing Bureau, so I think to the extent there are lessons that you want to share with us, particularly if we're going to be looking at maybe a future, an update to the disparity study, or if we're going to be looking at changes to our code? What are some of those best practices that you participated in?
Absolutely.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Next, sir. Mayor Hales, commissioners, thank you. I'm Matt Malmsheimer. I'm an attorney. I work with